Yes. Welcome. It's Hip and the Lip. I am the Hip. This is the Lip.
Good evening, everybody. Hip and Lip Nation. Hello.
Hello. It is a March Madness Selection Sunday evening, March 13th. As we recap another fun-filled week of Islanders entertainment hockey.
I like you phrasing it that way.
Entertainment. Yes. Yes. Well, in fact, madness the Islanders are causing their fans most recently. I feel like it's a coming back to earth the last few games as we'll get into them. Not only picking up a point in the last two games combined, where, coming into that stretch, they were just winning games left and right, no matter how pretty or ugly. And, I think it's fair to say coming back to earth. We'll do a divisional / wild card standings update. Then we will get into some of the games, some very significant injuries affecting the Islanders, and some injuries on other teams that we'll mention that are in this real intense march of hockey for the Islanders, with just so many games being recently played, with their 7-game road trip, and then they just had 2 more games on the road. And 3 more coming up this week on the road. There's a couple of home games mixed in there, but it's just a lot of hockey for this team. And in fact, we'll get into how they have a lot of games in hand. So,
yeah, talking about March Madness, I think it's 17 games in the month of March.
That's nuts.
That is madness.
And so, Metropolitan Division standings update. The Capitals now have passed the century mark in points at 103 with 68 games. They're 49-14-5. Second place, the New York Rangers, and this includes today, they lost to the Penguins.
They did.
69 games, 85 points. The Islanders, 66 games, 82 points. So the Islanders only 3 points behind the Rangers and 3 games in hand. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, 80 points. So only 2 points behind the Islanders with 68 games played. So the Islanders have 2 games in hand on Pittsburgh. Philadelphia, still hanging around, 76 points. So it's only 4 points behind Pittsburgh. With 67 games played, that's 1 fewer than Pittsburgh, 1 more than the Islanders. Carolina, 74 points, 69 games played. The Devils, 73 points, 69 games. And Columbus all the way down with 64. That's your whole Metropolitan Division standings update. Whew. And that exhale is kind of reflective of this. We're going to say it again and again, this month of March for hockey, especially for the Islanders, with, 3 or 4 games every week down this home stretch, and every game is going to feel like a playoff game. And their schedule is no walkover either. It's not been, and it will not be. So a lot of fun for us and a lot of ups and downs. And so, recapping the last 3 games overall, their first game back from their 7-game road trip was against Pittsburgh on March 8th. That was Tuesday night, where they had a nice 2-1 win, and John Tavares got the scoring started in the first goal with a power play. And, you had to think that the team had a different energy level coming into this, being their first home game in weeks. And, with their home crowd behind them, and they got the scoring started and, ended up winning this game in a maybe not the prettiest game, as we often say about this team. And another highlight is that we were in attendance for this game. So
yes,
that
we
was
were.
So fun, this to was be the, fun to be a part of it. Yep.
And the first trip to the Barclays Center to see a hockey game, at least.
That's right. the Hibs' first hockey game at the Barclays Center. So started off on the right note there. And, you know, so what was your takeaway from this game?
Well, just the entire experience, being that we were in attendance, or just for the Islanders in general, what took place on the ice? Because, I mean, I'd say the experience as a whole, you know, and I've been to a couple games at the Barclays now, you know, it's no Coliseum. And, you know, I grew up going to the Coliseum, and I do miss the Coliseum dearly. But, you know, I thought the crowd was definitely into it. I thought it was, you know, a good energetic crowd, you know, Pittsburgh, one of their rivals. As you pointed out, one of their first game, you know, their first game with the Barclays in a few weeks there, having just finished their 7-game road trip. And, you know, I thought they came out pretty good. I thought it was, a good first period. Pittsburgh picked up their play. Of course, Islanders would get that first goal, as you mentioned, Tavares on the power play, a little bit of, you know, deflection. The Islanders were off and running early. Pittsburgh would tie the game on a 4-on-4, I believe. It was a nice, really nice pass from Crosby to Letang. Letang was cutting down the right side and took a really nice feed from Crosby and roofed it past Yaroslav Halak over his glove hand for a tie game there, 1-1. And then we got to wait online for about a year and a day to get our dinner and beers after that first period. had to wait online for the bathroom, which is something that we heard where we were not going to have to do anymore at the Barclays, unlike the Coliseum. Like, oh, no more bathroom lines. Well, I guess for maybe if you're on the, you know, if you're not a part of the unwashed masses on the top level, if you're, you know, at the on the whatever level they call the bottom level there, which has like all the food options and all, you know, the spit and all the room and, you know, in the concourse area and no bathroom lines. But if you're upstairs and you have fewer choices for food and you have long bathroom lines and long lines for food and beer and whatever. So we got to experience that on our way back.
I'll just add to that.
All right.
You know, we enjoy jumping into, you know, or I guess part of the excitement is having a beer between periods, right? And so it made you feel like you wished that the intermission was longer, because we couldn't go on our food and beer run in time before the next period started. There was just wasn't enough time.
Yeah, by the time we did the bathroom and the food and beer, by the time we got back up to our seats, period had already started. So, unfortunately, that element has not been eliminated for those that were unable to do the same at the Coliseum. Although I will say, I mean, it depended where you were in the and, you know, obviously I've been at the Coliseum on nights where there was, you know, enough people that we could all fit, you know, in one car going home. But, you know, <they're, laughs> but you know, when the game was sold out, it was a lot tougher to, you know, to maneuver to get food or go to the bathroom and get back to your seats before the beginning of the period. But I think it was actually easier at the Coliseum, my honest opinion. Maybe again different on the bottom level, but
yeah,
we do get back to our seats to catch that second period, and you know, I mean, I would say pretty uneventful. I mean, you know, both, you know, there was some back and forth in the period. I thought the Penguins got the better of the play for the most part. And then as we get to the third period and we get to the game-winning goal that would eventually be scored on the power play by Anders Lee. But, you know, I mean, I thought the Islanders for the most part were, you know, gave a really, you know, a good concerted effort, considering that it was, again, as we mentioned, their first game since, you know, coming home since they ended their road trip. And sometimes, you know, teams will come out flat. And I thought for the most part the Islanders definitely showed some energy and engaged physically with the Penguins. And we got to see a little tussle between Malkin and Hamonic, which is takes us back to the 2013 playoffs when they were in each other's grills, it seemed like, for the entire for that entire series. Hamonic, while he was willing participant in that little scuffle, at least in terms of dropping his gloves, Malkin decided to keep his gloves on, and they got coincidental roughing minors instead of 5-minute fighting majors. But yeah, I thought Hamonic played a tremendous game. I thought he was one of their best defensemen, one of their best players overall. And we get to the third period, Mr. Hip.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Hamonic make the save of the game at the very end?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so as in the dying seconds of the game, Hamonic was able to stick his leg out as Pittsburgh was pressuring to try and tie it, and was able to get across. I forget who took the shot, but was able to get his leg out there, and with a half empty net there. So yeah, I thought it was one of his best games of the year. I thought he played a tremendous game, Travis Hamonic, and really seems to get under the skin of Evgeny Malkin, one of the great players in the game. And we will get into him a little bit later on, as you pointed out, in terms of injuries for other teams. The game winning goal was awesome. It was Anders Lee, just an old fashioned battle in front of the net. Lee and Letang battling as the Islanders were on a power play. Shot from the point by, I think it was Letty, and deflected home by Anders Lee, who got the game winner. Letang was not happy with being knocked down his rear end by Anders Lee there, as he just physically overpowered him, and Letang gave him a little whack after the puck went in the net. But it was just really an awesome sight to see Anders Lee, and that's what you need Anders Lee doing. This is exactly his game. Anders Lee is getting his big ass to the front of the net, and screening the goaltender and deflecting pucks as they come towards the net, and that's exactly what he did there, and just won the physical battle in front. And you heard Jack after the game say, that's what he does. That's what we need him to do. And I wish other people did that too. So Jack not calling out anybody in particular, but saying that he wish other players would do what Anders Lee did on that exact play there.
It was the NBC Sports got their money's worth out of this one. They picked up this game, and it was nationally televised, and it was intense from start to finish. There's no question.
No question.
With these teams knowing that they're next to each other in the standings, and every point is huge. Now, one element about the second period, which you, I think, intentionally glossed over, was how a certain goalie writhed in pain after, I think, stretching out for a shot and could not stay on the ice. Thereafter, he went straight to the trainer's table. He went straight to the locker room, and he was no longer seen. And that is one Yaroslav Halak.
So that's of course the negative of this game, despite the victory. Yeah, and it looked bad. I mean, you could just tell. I mean, the second, and he wasn't touched. I mean, he just, I think he's had groin issues before, Halak, but he went down. I mean, and you just knew that it was not going to be good. And I mean, I thought it was a good thing initially that he skated off on his own power, but he didn't have to be helped off or anything. But he just knew it wasn't going to be good. And then, of course, the news broke the next day that he will be out for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And Thomas Greiss came in to finish it up, came in the close, if you will, after the starting goaltender had to be yanked due to injury. And, Greiss was able to hold down the fort and secure the victory. But Greiss now thrust into a role that he is not familiar with, and that's being the number one goalie, as Halak will be out for 6 to 8 weeks. And who knows if he will, make any kind of contribution for the rest of the season, because that'll take us right into the playoffs. And, if they do make the playoffs, hopefully they will. And if they do, he will not be back. At least I'd be shocked if he's back for the first round. So I think we can assume that Greiss will be starting, even if Halak's able to come back. So now, Thomas Greiss, you are the number one. People have been asking for you to be number one. Now you are. So let's see if you can, show us, play the same way you've been playing all year, and, really grab hold of that role as a player that we've also talked about a little bit here. Mr. Berube will be the backup now in every game, and that he will be getting some starts down the stretch, but Greiss now the clear number one goalie for the Islanders.
And you said that some fans have been asking for him to be the number one. I think you could draw the inference from my questioning of Halak and Greiss in previous episodes that I may have been asking for it as well. I don't know. I try to look at it as objectively as possible, but when a goalie's playing as well as he has, and I feel like Halak has had more peaks and valleys to his play than Greiss this year, although Halak has had a bigger sample size, Greiss was I think it was sometime last week or the week before, the highest save percentage in the NHL. And he just looked like a more consistent goalie to me from my still admittedly novice perspective. But It's here now, and so we'll, it's like you said, it's his first opportunity to be a number one. Well, it's been handed to him, and you know, his wife has chimed in on the subject as well. The night that I don't know if you saw this, but the night when Halak went down, Brittany Grice tweeted in response to Arthur Staples' article that says Yaroslav Halak hurt. She wrote, "That's Thomas 24/7 for you on and off the ice." So Brittany Grice throwing support behind her husband for
that he's number one. Know. That he's number one in her heart. I guess is that what she meant by that?
I don't know. I think we could you know do ourselves a disservice by trying to analyze what the tweet exactly means by spending 5 minutes on it. That's what she said.
You draw not my contention, but draw your own conclusion.
Right, you draw your own conclusion. That's what she said. I just thought, you know, she joined the conversation, and that's what she said. And so now he's our number one. Some people were for it. Some people were not necessarily. Well, now they have to be. Now the analysts have to, and the fans have to throw their support behind him, and we'll see how it plays out. So. You know, he had his first opportunity as the team's number one goalie, if you will, against the Toronto Maple Leafs the next night. So the Islanders had to fly to Toronto after their win, their intense emotional win over Pittsburgh, and fell short in this one in overtime on a 4-3 shootout loss. And I'll just start by mentioning a comment from our Islanders color commentator, Butch Goring, who we like to bring up time and time again because we respect this individual. And he said about halfway into the game, he just said, you know, look, the Islanders are just not playing with the same energy as they have in the previous few games, that it's understandable because of those opponents. You know, even as a professional, you can't just bring that same high level energy in every game. And you look at, you know, Toronto has the fewest points in the NHL, 55 points. So, you know, here they are, you know, after a gritty win against Pittsburgh, now in Toronto, and they just didn't have the same energy level and they ended up losing. They got a point, but they still lost.
Yeah, they did. I can excuse them for this game. I think a lot of people coming to this game are almost resigned to the fact that, not that it would be a loss, but, you know, back to back, you know, apparently, and Howie mentioned this during the broadcast, they didn't get in until late. I think, like, by the time I got to Toronto and I got to sleep, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, very quick turnaround, flying to Toronto, playing the next night after playing a couple emotional games against the Rangers and Pittsburgh the night before. And,
Which they both won.
Yeah, which were bigger games, of course, for the standings. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it was clear that they just didn't get up there. Something else that Butchie says, there's sea legs under them in the early going of this game. And like I said, something that you can excuse and something I won't get on them for now, their performance in Boston, which we will, of course, get to. I will not be as forgiving for that one, but we'll get to that in just a few minutes here. but Thomas Grice, as you mentioned, his first game as the proverbial number one goalie. You know, I thought he played okay. You know, it wasn't a standout performance by him, but, you know, played well enough. And they, of course, had the lead late in the game after a goal by Ryan Strome. And Toronto would tie the game on a power play. Strome take up the way as he would score the go-ahead goal there in the third period. And then Toronto would tie the game on a power play in which Strome took a hooking penalty in his own zone. Bad penalty, and they would tie the game. But and then, of course, they would win in the shootout. But, yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, Toronto definitely had more jump than the Islanders did. Toronto, I mean, it's just a bunch of kids right now that are, you know, out there playing loosey-goosey, a term that I've heard used multiple times before by somebody that I used to listen to a lot on the radio, so I'll throw that out there. Very loosey-goosey young kids that are just trying to make an impression on Mike Babcock and Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and company up there in Toronto. I thought that, you know, that they hung in there, the Islanders, and they were – and it looked like they may hold on for victory there, but not so much, and then would lose in the skills competition, as Howie likes to say.
I'm going to – I'm going to turn the tables on you for about 30 seconds here and try to describe two nice plays from Ryan Pulock that I observed from watching this game. It was late in the third period when it was still tied, and I noticed he, in the offensive zone, he was battling for the puck along the boards, and he made a nice, he made a nice centering pass from the point, and it didn't end up. You know, I don't even know if the recipient of the pass got off a good shot, but I just like the effort and the opportunity he was trying to create. And then, literally about 15 seconds later, the Toronto, I think Toronto was on a there was a turnover. Toronto got possession of the puck, and it was one offensive player on Toronto and Pulock like. Going towards
depending on
well, that. Yeah. I don't know if you remember this or not.
Yeah, I actually went back to take a look. Once you noted that this was something that that you observed, I wanted to go back and take a look, and I do know the sequence that you're referring to.
And so this guy, I don't know what his name is, but he was really trying to get around him. The Toronto player was trying to get around Pulock to get a shot on net, and Pulock was like. Just like stride for stride with this guy. And he actually, the offensive player on Toronto just stopped and waited for other players to come in so he could create a play. He didn't even get it. Like he had nowhere to go with the puck towards the net. And I just thought, that happening in a very short period of time in the ice, how he was in the offensive mindset and then got right back on defense and made a play there too was impressive.
Yeah, and Pulock. Well, you're right. And Pulock has shown that he belongs here. I mean, he has really demonstrated a lot. He's skating really well. And like you said, he made a nice play there. He led the rush there. I mean, you always like to see defensemen leading rush. I mean, we've seen Nick Leddy do it. You saw him do it in this game, actually. I'll point that out. Nick Leddy had a really nice rush. I mean, end to end. Started in his own zone, brought it up, and scored the tying goal to make it 2-2. But Pulock on that in that sequence, yeah. I mean, he led the rush. Was able to create space for himself, got the puck, right in prime scoring position in front of the net. I think that I forget what island to play. I was driving the net to try and get a stick on it. I think it might have just been pushed wide. And then, yeah, they came right back the other way. Pulock was able to skate back and, get back on defense and made a really nice play one-on-one against the Toronto player there. So that was, a really good sequence for Pulock. And overall, he has really demonstrated that he belongs here. And I don't see any reason why he should ever come out of the lineup at this point. I mean, you want to tell me that you don't want to, have a situation, especially when they get to the playoffs, where he's fatigued, he's not used to playing this many games. I mean, I can understand the argument, but I mean, he is entrenched right now in this lineup. There is no reason why he should come out of this lineup, really, other than, under the guise that we have to give him a little, a little bit of a break and, make sure that he doesn't get fatigued as we head towards the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, you want to see more of him shooting the puck, want to see them try and maybe set up plays for him where they can get the puck back to the point and, let him unleash that rocket of a shot that he has. But he's been strong along the boards. He's strong in front of his net. He has really demonstrated he is going to be a hell of a defenseman for a long time in this league.
I think we'll have to go to Twitter to see your immediate tweet reactions if it's announced that Pulock is a healthy scratch and Brian Strait's in the lineup.
Well, I mean, we know DeHaan, we're going to get to this, of course, in a little bit. DeHaan, it looks like we'll be coming back. So I don't think they're going to be taking Pulock out of the lineup when DeHaan comes back. I mean, I think you will most likely see, Hickey just slotted back down to the third pairing role with Pulock and, DeHaan take his spot next to Travis Hamonic there. But if he does, then yes, I will have some reactions if that does happen. But I don't think they would ever at this point do that because considering
take it to the Twitter. We're trying to get you to tweet. You will take it to the Twitter.
I will take it to the Twitter, and I will send out lots of Twitter as if in response to that. Brian Strait has been bad too. So it's regressed back to his typical Brian Strait. Terrible decisions with the puck. Terrible giveaways. He stinks. I mean, no other way to analyze or assess or comment on his play other than he stinks. And it's time that he goes back to the bench as soon as Calvin DeHaan is ready to take his spot.
So surprise, the Islanders come up short in a Saturday afternoon game on the road at Boston. This one, a 3-1 loss. I just for perspective, though, on how, you know, this team, how well, I shouldn't say how well this team is playing, but maybe better put, how well their performance in the win-loss columns are and overtime loss columns. So they lost to Boston 3-1 on Saturday yesterday. It was only the Islanders' second regulation loss in their last 10 games. They were 7-2-1. Just to show you, like, you know, how many games they're actually winning, whether you think they play well or not, they're getting a lot of W's, and this one, they just, you know, they
were terrible.
They just weren't there.
Oh, they were awful. Oh, they were. This was another terrible game, and this was just an their effort in this one was inexcusable. Absolutely. And I don't understand this, that they're just not ready to play in the afternoon. I don't care where the earth is in its rotation. I mean, but they have to be ready to play whatever the hell time. It's not like this came as a surprise to them that they were playing at 1 o'clock. And they had a couple of days off there. I mean, they played a lot, but they had
2 days off.
Yeah. And there's just no excuse for the way they came out. They were awful in the first period, outshot 14-5, a zillion turnovers. I mean, everybody from top to bottom was bad in that first – I mean, the whole game, but especially in that first period, they would eventually, you know, start skating a little bit better as the game went along. But, I mean, they were just bad throughout, really, from start to finish. That second goal that Boston scored at the end of the second period after the Islanders were tied the game – on a John Tavares goal, his 200th goal. So congratulations to Mr. John Tavares for scoring 200 goals in the NHL. But that was a nice goal, that sequence. I'll just give Matt Martin credit, who's been playing really well. Again, I want to get that out there. That fourth line continues to still be their most consistent line. But Matt Martin started the sequence by creating a turnover in the offensive zone as he was getting off the ice, and then the JT line came on, and they were able to cycle a little bit, and eventually, Kyle Okposo, who was put back on the John Tavares line, was able to get the puck right out in front. Tavares backhanded it past Tuukka Rask there to tie the game. And then the backbreaker goal was the second goal by Boston, the game-winning goal, to just as the second period was ending, another late-period goal given up by the Islanders as Johnny Boychuk tried to clear, was not able to, you know, tried to ring around the boards. It was gloved down. David Krejci then put on a little skating display as all the Islanders decided just to watch him instead of actually trying to defend against him. And he was able to find a wide open David Pastrnak and the young phenom for Boston. And he was able to score his first of two goals as Franz Nielsen decided to vacate, you know, his man there, which was Pastrnak. And what he was doing there, Franz, I have no idea. Islander Mania doesn't like anybody criticizing Super Franz, as he's known as in those parts, but terrible job there by Franz Nielsen, leaving his man there all alone in front of the net, and that's directly resulted in the goal. 2-1, game over. Islanders, you know, didn't really show much in the third period, and now that's their second consecutive loss. I know it was a regulation loss as opposed to an overtime loss, but still their second consecutive loss, and really a bad game from start to finish and really inexcusable, the effort.
How do you explain this? Maybe you can't, but we'll try. So
all right.
We watched last Sunday, a week ago today, was the Islanders scoring three goals in the first 5 minutes against the Rangers at Madison Square Garden, yes?
Yep.
So they obviously came out blazing in that game, and that was a Sunday, you know, 5 p.m. game. That was their seventh game of a road trip. I mean, it was in New York, but still, I mean, they've been on the road all this time, and you're watching the first, like, 10 minutes of that game, and you're like,
and they
wow.
were flying. They were flying right. all over the place. I
so
mean, that score was indicative of their play.
How do you explain a team flying like that? And then, you know, here's another away game. They had a couple days off, and it's against a quality team. Boston is now atop the Atlantic Division. Two teams are a point behind them, but still, they're in first place. And just how do you explain the difference in the quality of the play from the Islanders, you know, against these two formidable opponents 1 week apart? Just coming out. You know, let's just talk about the first period. Why does this happen?
I mean, I think it's coaching more than anything else. I think this is where you laid it at the feet of Jack Capuano. I mean, obviously, you can always say the players and, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, they can be, you know, they're given the game plan and they're, you know, given all the coaching that, you know, that a coach can possibly provide. But at the end of the day, it's on the players. But I think whenever a team comes out like that, you have to look at the coaching staff and say, how is this team not prepared to play this game? Because Boston jumped all over them. It's like the Islanders didn't know what they were going to be doing. Like they weren't prepped for this team or, you know, I honestly don't know how you can come out that like that. And I mean, like I said, I've been very critical of Jack Capuano. I don't think he's an NHL coach. I think he should have been fired, you know, we can however many times you want to say, but he should not be the coach of this team right now. This is an example of where I lay it at his feet because they were clearly not ready to play this game. And it's just, it's inexcusable. I mean, especially going down the stretch, especially at this time of year, you're not like into the, you know, the doldrums of December or January, you know, where you get to the halfway point and, you know, you still have a lot of games to go. I mean, you're coming down the home stretch, you're fighting for a playoff spot. You know, I don't want to hear that, you know, hey, it's a long season and it happens because we've seen it happen too many times now. And even in games that they won, that you heard me criticize their play in games that they won on that road trip. But I honestly don't know. I don't know how you can come out like that. And I mean, they really were that bad. And they
look,
just
you don't have the luxury of being in on the team meetings, preparing for these games. That being said, like, what would a coach that you approve of for this team, what could they do to better prepare the Islanders to come out playing in this game like they would have against the Rangers? Like what are some specific things a coach could actually do when you talk about game? You mentioned game planning. So does it have to do with educating the players on, you know, what the matchups are going to be, the different lines on the team, the line strengths, weaknesses, the types of plays to try to set up, like what are we getting at?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you're going to approach every game differently depending on your opponent. And, you know, some teams, they like to get an early jump. Other teams, like they like to feel out their opponents and kind of counter what they're going to do. And you'll see that. And, you know, you saw in the Rangers-Pittsburgh game today, I was watching a little bit of that. I mean, the Rangers jumped all over Pittsburgh early on, and eventually, I mean, the Rangers, you know, after playing yesterday and having less than 24 hours in between games, you saw the fatigue set in with them. But, I mean, they clearly wanted to expose something in Pittsburgh early on, and they, you know, weren't able to score, but they seemed to be getting, like, a ton of open shots and getting players in position, you know, in prime scoring areas to try and score. And, you know, the Islanders in this game, I mean, they just it's like they had the – it's like their heads were just completely like up their asses. I mean, I don't know what else to say. And, you know, again, the coach, you know, will instruct the team how he wants them to come out. And again, sometimes the team will kind of feel out the other team and the other team will do the same. And then, you know, the pace will start to pick up and you'll see other instances where a team will jump on, you know, another team early because they want to try to expose something that they may have noticed in watching game film or, they feel like there's a matchup that they want to, you know, that they want to expose if they like, you know, one particular line, but, you know, you don't get the last change on the road, and you know, Jack Capuano doesn't believe in matchups or matching up lines anyway. So, you know, it's 1-2-3-4 with him. But I think
two possibilities come to mind. One is the coach instructed them to not come out guns blazing like they did against the Rangers to feel out the Bruins for whatever reason. That's one possibility. Okay.
Well, I mean, I won't say that he told them not to come out guns blazing, but. You know, again, sometimes you want to get an idea of what your opponent's going to do and just try and go, you know, and counterattack. And
all right, fine. Yeah. But the other possibility is he did tell, you know, he did set it up so that they would be very aggressive up front, and they just didn't. Is that remotely possible?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, you can always blame the coach. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he can only prepare the player so much, and then they have to execute. So that's also fair. And some people think that coaches get too much criticism and. You know, too much credit and too much criticism when the team, you know, doesn't play well, too much credit when they do play well. But, you know, I definitely am the school of thought that when a team comes out that, you know, listless, you have to look at the coach. And it's not unfair to say that the coach did not have this team properly, you know, prepared to play. And, you know, the coach a lot of times will take that upon themselves. But, you know, I don't know what else you can – I don't know how else you can excuse away. I mean, they're just awful start to the period and – to the game, and I mean, they eventually, again, they did pick it up, but it was just clearly, again, too little too late. And then third period, I mean, they were clearly demoralized after that second goal by Boston to give them the lead, you know, very late in the second period. And, you know, the third period, Boston really just had to defend, and you know, they got the third goal, you know, with a couple minutes left in the third period, however much time was left, three or four minutes, whatever it was left in the third period. And you could, at that point, the Islanders were clearly done. You have to look at the coach when the team comes out like that.
Well, Mr. Jack has his hands full this week, talking about preparing for games. Tomorrow, the 14th, at home against Florida. Then the next night at Pittsburgh. They have one day off. Then they play at Nashville on Thursday. Then they play at Dallas on Saturday. These are four teams that, if the season ended today, are in the playoffs. Dallas is in first place, tied for first in their division. Florida's in second place in their division, 1 point behind Boston.
Yep.
So Jack has his hands full, and I don't even know how you find time to prepare if for four opponents like this in 6 days. But you know, he's really being put to the test in game planning right now. It would seem to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not going to be an easy stretch for this team going down, you know, at least for the next few weeks. And it really throughout the end of the season. I mean, they play a lot of games, and they're going to be put to the test. And, you know, it's going to be a battle of attrition, as it always is in a long season. And, you know, you just hope that you can play your best as the season comes to an end, and that you're peaking, and that you're playing your absolute best going into the playoffs. And then, you know, of course, from there, it's matchups and whatever. But, you know, I mean, it's definitely going to be a very big test for the coaching staff and obviously the players as well as we head down the home stretch. And, it does not get any easier for them as they play a Florida team that's up and coming tomorrow. And then, we'll go to Nashville or we'll go to Pittsburgh on Tuesday to take on the Penguins again. The Penguins now, of course, without Evgeny Malkin, who will be out for the next 6 to 8 weeks himself after I don't know when he got injured. I don't know if they announced it was in the Islander game or, you know, when his injury took place. But, he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks now. So big blow for Pittsburgh, but that'll still be a tough game. And then Nashville, I think they won there last year. But, you know, Nashville's a playoff team and, will not be an easy opponent. And then, we'll finish up this next little stretch here with Dallas. And Dallas, you know, tied for first place in their division. And Dallas having a tremendous year. Islanders beat Dallas, of course. It was one of our early podcasts that we talked about in January. But they will be taking them on again the second and final time this season next Saturday. And, yeah, it does not get any easier.
So, you're going to put on. We're going to put your coaching fedora on
I'm a 1950s NHL coach,
and throw out the following strategic question. So, presumably, Jean-François Berube is going to start one of the next two games. It's back-to-back games at home against Florida tomorrow night, at Pittsburgh on Tuesday. Do you start him against Florida at home, or do you so that you could use Greiss against Pittsburgh on the road the following night? Because Pittsburgh is the team, up your ass in the standings, or do you do something else with logic that I can't think of right now?
I mean, I guess you have two games, you have two goalies, so back to back, that the Islanders will be, Jack will not be starting one goalie in those two games. He'll be, starting one in one and then the other. I would say what you'll probably see will be Berube. My guess will be Berube on Monday. And Florida's out.
I'm not asking for your guess. I'm asking for what you would do if you were the coach.
Oh, okay.
We'll find out tomorrow morning probably who's starting. But I don't care what your guess is. I want to know what you would do.
What I would do. I guess my guess is also reflective of what I would do, because I would definitely start Berube tomorrow. Give Greiss, Greiss has now played, he played in the Pittsburgh game, came in after Halak got hurt and then played in the next two games. So I would say put Berube in for Florida. Pittsburgh's in your division. Pittsburgh is right on your behind. So I would say Berube Monday and then Greiss on Tuesday against
Pittsburgh. Berube hasn't played, I think, in over a month in live action. I think that we were talking about a potential three-headed monster way back when, and
one of his heads was cut off.
And we thought that we had thought that he would get a decent number of starts because of a possible trade, but that never happened. But now, claiming him off waivers could look like a shrewd move for Garth Snow. I know you don't like to give that guy much credit, but and you know he this happened and they have him, and you know, he has some track record of maybe being a good goalie. So maybe that wasn't the worst move in the world when the Islanders claimed him on waivers and decided to carry three goaltenders.
Yeah, well, I mean, they clearly like him. I mean, I wasn't necessarily critical of that. I mean, you don't want to. I mean, normally teams are not going to be carrying three goalies. You know, you're going to have your starter and your backup and whoever you have in the minors. And then if somebody gets hurt, you have your call up in the minors. I mean, this guy has been with the team, so, you know, they're not bringing him up for Bridgeport or anything. And like you said, he hasn't been playing. I mean, you know, I don't know how much time in practice he's been getting, you know, with the three goalies. I mean, he's probably going to be getting more now that Halak is hurt. But, yeah, I mean, hey, if he comes in and plays well in the starts that he makes, you know, I'm very willing to give Garth credit when credit is deserved. But, you know, Garth hasn't really earned too much credit considering that this team has had very little success over his tenure. But Berube is going to be definitely going to be an important cog for them going down the stretch because Greiss is not going to be starting every game, and they're going to need Berube when he does start to play well and give him a chance to win. So
let's just do a very quick injury update on this team because they are mounting. And I think, you know, we got some updates earlier today on some players who are on the mend and when they're coming back. And, you know, let's just quickly run through it here. So Calvin DeHaan, one of the more formidable defensemen, is expected to return either tomorrow, Monday, or Tuesday of this week. So we'll see if that happens. And, you know, Brian Strait presumably will ride the pine with as the lip is – we'll be emphatically upset if that isn't the case, and we'll look forward to that reaction. Part of me hopes that
you know why it will be though, because of the righty lefty thing. Because Brian Strait's left hand defenseman, as is Calvin DeHaan. So if they sit Pulak, now you have two lefties, which Strait and Hickey will be your bottom pairing, and they don't like that. So
Jack has an easy sell to Brian Strait on why he's getting benched, not because he sucks, but because he is the same sided stick as Calvin DeHaan.
Sure. We'll go with that. We want righty lefties for all three of our pairings.
So Adam Pellick got a little bit of word here in an article saying that he resume skating this week. So I don't think they're trying to create the expectation that he's going to come back to play. We still don't know what his medical issue is. They were saying that his career could be in jeopardy. We didn't know why. We still don't know why. We still don't know why he's not playing, but he is resume skating. He's still apparently several weeks away. But, you know, if you were worried that Adam Pellick is, you know, looking for fast food jobs now, no offense to fast food jobs, but, you know, worried that he would have, you know, be his professional hockey career would be over. He's still in the mix apparently. So we'll see how that plays out. Marek Zydlicki is still out for a little while. He's not coming back anytime soon. Apparently, a little while means he's not coming back tomorrow or Tuesday. I think it's fair to say. And the same goes for
Mikhail Gabrovsky.
Yep. So that's the quick injury update on this team. Well, Halak, we already discussed in depth, groin injury out 6 to 8 weeks. And so Greiss and Berube are the tandem. I am ready for our hipster moment of Zenith, which has nothing to do with hockey this week. But before we get there, is there anything else this week that you want to mention?
Well, it's a good thing that Calvin DeHaan is coming back. They really need him back in there. You know, just really a calming influence on that back end. Some of their other defensemen have not been playing as well, besides Brian Strait, who has been hideous. But Johnny Boychuk struggled in that Boston game. Thomas Hickey's also struggled as well. I think he's definitely suited to be a third pairing type defenseman. So that is huge that he is coming back. DeHaan, who has played really well this year after struggling somewhat last year in his sophomore year. So I just wanted to get that in there. And I also just wanted to throw out there, all right, that Sports Illustrated put forth a list. The 100 greatest sports or moments, or 100 greatest moments in sports history, and the Islanders made that list. How about that? Number 98. All right. Number 98 was Bobby Nystrom scoring that overtime goal in Game 6 against the Philadelphia Flyers in 1980, which started their dynasty, of course, the first of four Stanley Cups. And, you know, a overtime goal to win a cup, so it's always a pretty big moment. So comes in at number 98 out of 100. So
you know what? That's there's so many moments in sports history that just to crack 100, I mean, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, I guess. But it came 90 spots behind Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals in the 2008 Summer Olympics. I mean, you talk about W gas. Number 8, really, Sports Illustrated? That's what you come. What's one of the things in your top 10 is Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals? Who cares? Oh. I don't know. I just saw that one.
Well, I did just yawn, so I don't know if that's a sign of it's getting late or if it's a sign that I'm in agreement.
Number 98, though, on the list, Bobby Nystrom, the first of 4 Stanley Cups for the New York Islanders, and we are now going on 33 years without a Stanley Cup and 23 years without a playoff series victory. And Larry Brooksall made sure to get that point that out again in his column today, in his NHL column that he does every Sunday for the Post. You know, made sure to get a little blurb in there about that. Talked about Cal Clutterbuck coming over for Nito Niederreiter, which that trade has worked out very well for the Islanders, which I would agree. As badly as they handled that situation back in 2003, whatever it was, when they traded for Clutterbuck, Clutter Duck Butter, I should say. And but it may mention as well that Garth, even though he's made some, you know, shrewd and savvy moves, sometimes you need to take a risk and make a big move to try and put the team over the top, and he has failed to do that. And he didn't use that word fail, but I'll use it. He failed to do that again this past trade deadline and this past offseason. So if they don't advance, I think Gart should be shown the door, but I just wanted to.
And I'll just throw in there, you know, in fairness, you know, we just went however long, 50 minutes talking about the Islanders play in the last 3 games, and one player we didn't mention at all was Shane Prince. I mean, he's playing, and, you know, for a forward – you know, for defensemen, they sometimes say, right, if you don't hear the player's name mentioned, that could be a good thing because he's not screwing up.
Not for a forward. Right? For a defenseman, not for a forward.
Exactly. Right. Who Shane Prince is. And right. The fact that we haven't mentioned him, I mean, he had that one goal against, I think it was Winnipeg.
Yeah.
That goal to take the lead.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was a level, that was nice excitement, but, you know, No mention of him this week because there was, I guess, nothing notable to say,
well,
really.
He's playing on a line with Anders Lee and Nikolai Kuhlman, with Kuhlman playing center, even though he's not a center. So I don't understand what that line, why he has those 3 guys together. I mean, Grabowski, you know, when he comes back, you know, we'll see a change. I don't know what it's going to be, and who knows when he'll come back. But they have to change up that trio. That's not a good pairing, good line combination. They need to do something different there.
So maybe Prince, they're just still trying to figure out how to best utilize him.
Yeah, I guess. And Prince has been okay. I mean, he hasn't played badly, but he hasn't really shown that you know, that he is going to be.
He skates well. We acknowledge that he skates well, but he hasn't been bad.
He hasn't been bad. No, he hasn't been bad. I mean, he's you know, definitely demonstrated, you know, that he has skill and that he has ability, but. Jury's still out, and we'll see, you know, what kind of impact he makes on the team going forward. All right, HMOZ.
All right, so, Moment of Zenith. Yeah, so we're getting a double shot of the hipster moment of Zenith of the week. So there are 2 hipster moments of Zenith. Nothing to do with hockey this week, though, you know, because, you know, we did acknowledge that I went to my first game at Barclays. But that wasn't, you know, that's something that a casual fan should actually enjoy. So, you know, the point of Hipster Moment of Zenith is to identify things that your average fan would not pick up on necessarily. So the first is yesterday I had my fantasy baseball league auction. So I do participate in fantasy sports, and this is something that I think we'll get into perhaps in the off season. We'll talk. I think there'll be a lot of time to get into fantasy sports.
Well, not till July, though, because the Islanders, are when they win the Cup, you know, we're going to be talking about them solely until they win the Cup, right? And then
exactly. So there will be some time until then. in any event, we had a fantasy baseball auction, and you know, I'm New York based, and the league I'm in, a lot of New York Mets fans, and of course the Mets were in the World Series last year. There are a few Yankee fans, but all New York, New Jersey guys, and a lot of players taken in this draft. You know, it's you know, two utility spots, and anybody that does fantasy baseball would understand two utility, six bench players. There's a lot of players in every you know, batter position. But a play, so the it took over 4 hours, but it was 4 hours of intense fun. But the moment that it ended, and the last player was taken, everybody did a hurrah because it finally concluded. And what I exclaimed to the crowd was, and congratulations to David Wright for not being selected in this fantasy baseball draft.
So he is a free agent.
How the mighty have fallen.
Oh my God.
David Wright, you know, spinal stenosis last year, missing so much time, coming back, having a couple of big home runs. But I guess Mets fans just, you know, like, my not fantasy league mates just do not expect much from him this year at all.
And then so, just not, we're not sentimental at all either.
No, not at all. So David Wright, just kind of like out of the spotlight, at least as far as expectations go. So, but it'll be interesting to see how he plays out. Maybe he's, you know, low, very low expectations, I think is what it means.
Hey, hipster doctrine, low expectations.
So the other quick hipster moment of Zenith, you know, I mentioned March Madness at the outset here. So we're going to come full circle and go back to Selection Sunday, which was a few hours ago. And, you know, when they started this play-in game, was it 5-10 years ago, where, you know, you have your field of 64, but then they expanded it to 68, I believe, where they had four play-in games. So there's four teams vying to get in the field of 64 teams in the NCAA tournament, right? Indeed. Just to get some more, you know,
revenue for the NCAA and their TV partners and their
games. And, exactly. You know, it's like, who cares? It's two teams you never heard of, or not that you never heard of, but they're like, there's no way that they're going to go anywhere. So why are you really even watching? Whatever. Well, my alma mater is in a play-in game this year. So they were a bubble team, University of Michigan Wolverines. They had a nice upset win over Indiana in the Big Ten tournament on Friday. It was an exciting buzzer beater. That being said, you know, any objective Michigan Wolverines basketball fan who's watched the games knows that this is not really a championship caliber team. They have some players who could shoot. They have a big guy who, let's face it, he's white, and he can only do so well, you know, against some of the more formidable big men in the Big Ten. But he holds his own. He's pretty good for, you know, his body type and his athleticism. But they're just not a team that you watch and like, oh my God, they're going to run the table. They have a chance. Like a few years ago, they made it to the championship and Final Four, I think, in back-to-back years. So it might have been in the reverse order. In any event, so it's like kind of ironic. You know, you look down upon this playing game and now your team's in it. Of course, I'm going to watch it. And, you know, I think they're playing Tulsa, which I have no idea how good or bad they are. But they're probably similarly – you know, they're probably similarly skilled as Michigan. And, you know, if Michigan wins, they play Notre Dame in what we should call the first round. Well, the playing game is the first round, I think. And they call the field of 64 the second round. Anyway, so there are your hipster moments of Zenith. We'll see how Michigan does as well. And I think that does it for us here at Hip and the Lip. What do you say there?
Yeah, right. Well, I'll just throw one more thing in there just to finish up for March Madness. This is my alma mater, the University at Buffalo Bulls. They are also in the tournament, and they will be taking on Miami.
In the, right, you guys actually are – you don't have a playing game. So I wonder if this there. Is – has this happened where both of our alma maters –
last year, Buffalo –
the field of 64.
Yeah, well, Buffalo was in there last year too. Yeah, they
I think
lost.
Michigan was in it last year as well. So, all right, so we've both had our teams in there, but Michigan may not be in the field of 64. They still have a game to play. Anyway, all right, well, Buffalo Bison, is that right?
The Bulls. What? Bison is the Mets farm team.
Oh, same thing. all right. Well, thanks for tuning in. I say it every week. I'm saying it again. If you made it this far. Give us a nice rating on iTunes.
Yeah, we want all feedback. Please give us feedback.
We want constructive feedback. You can leave remarks on the iTunes. You know, you can find us there. You can follow us on Twitter. The Lip gives us his emphatic reactionary tweets to when Jack does stupid things, which and Garth doesn't make moves. So we always enjoy, and then analyzing the games as they're happening. So plenty of entertainment, a lot of games coming up this week alone. We'll have a lot to talk about next week as we recap a slate of four games and whatever else unfolds. As Hip and the Lip are here to sign out. So, all right.
Next.
All right, next.
All right.
Find something better to do. All right, thanks
a lot. We got this over with. Next.
All right, next.
All right, bye.
Okay.
Bye.
All right,
bye.